back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Iran has urged IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, not to be influenced by certain countries' political objectives. Iran's spokesperson made the remarks, during which he also hinted at the upcoming visit of Rafael Grossi, head of the IAEA, to Iran, saying, quote, "I hope this trip would be constructive like the previous ones." In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at present and previous instances where the IAEA has given in to pressure when it came to Iran's nuclear file, and if this time around it would act more constructively. First, let's talk to Tomaleski, who joins us from Vienna. So this upcoming talk, you've had Iran make some statements. Iran has, obviously, its own concerns when it comes to the IAEA and how it has politicized by becoming more involved than its boundaries. Can you explain how that has been the case?
Yes, of course. Let's just see what the issue right now is. You know that the agency has said that since late February 2021, the amount of access that the agency has had to Iran's facilities has been dramatically reduced. But this has nothing to do, of course, with the safeguards-related commitments that Iran has. This just means verification and monitoring of Iran's JCPOA-related commitments. That's, of course, because the status of the JCPOA, it hangs in the balance. We don't know how it's going to turn out, and Iran, based on its own internal laws, decided to restrict some of the access, unprecedented access, that it had given to the agency. What the agency is now concerned about, and it has said it's concerned about, is the continuity of knowledge. So it's saying that if and when the JCPOA is back in place, the agency would have to, of course, continue this verification and monitoring work, and in this stage, it needs to be able to know what is happening in order to have that continuity of knowledge. But as you said there are complaints raised by the Iranian side when it comes to attempts, they say, by certain countries, the US, the Europeans, sometimes named directly, for trying to sway the IAEA or turn it into a political organization or influence decisions that are being made by the IAEA. These include, for instance, in leaking of confidential documents that have been supplied by Iran, the fact that their agency stopped from directly condemning Israel for sabotage attempts and attacks against Iranian facilities, and also putting on the agenda what Iran says are unsubstantiated allegations against its nuclear program, and creating a political fire when it comes to Iran's activities. These are just some of the issues that I'm quickly pointing to. But of course, this visit that Mr. Grossi is going to have, coming just ahead of the IAEA board session on Iran and the upcoming talks on the JCPOA, a lot of people are saying how Mr. Grossi assesses this visit is going to directly impact the atmosphere of, and the trajectory of both the IAEA board session and the JCPOA talks.
Okay, thank you for that. Tomaleski there from Vienna, many thanks. Joining us for this edition of The Spotlight, we have historian and investigative journalist Tony Gosling, who joins us from Bristol. Also joining us, writer and political analyst John White, who joins us from Edinburgh.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Tony Gosling, let me start with you here and get your reaction to what the spokesman for Iran's foreign ministry has said. He has called on the International Atomic Energy Agency not to allow certain countries to abuse its name for the sake of achieving their own political objectives. Whom or to what is he referring to?
Well, look, it's quite obvious in something as sensitive as atomic energy that the International Atomic Energy Authority is basically walking a tightrope. So it's really, really difficult for them to please everybody, probably impossible. So they do have to look into, say, for example, if the Israelis give them allegations that they say that, that there is evidence that the Iranians have broken various agreements, then they have to look into those, however much they may not necessarily believe them. And so, you know, they have to show to the whole world that they're trying to be even-handed. Having said that, you know, they are, in as many other organisations across the world, not least of which is FIFA for football, you know, and the athletics organisations and the United Nations itself are being fought over. So these organisations, there are attempts to, you know, create coups within them in order to take them over for generally for the, you know, to push the influence of the West. Mainly, I think the West has been most proactive in trying to sabotage these organisations and take them over, infiltrate them, etc. And also we get a lot of spin here in the West. So, for example, the IAEA say things like, you know, we've had very good relations with the Iranians over the years. Then that will not be reported, I'm afraid, anywhere in the West, because it's a positive comment about Iran. So the International Atomic Energy Authority has got a really difficult job to do here, not only in showing both sides, in fact all sides, that it's prepared to take everything, any evidence that they give, seriously, but also in trying to keep its own independence. I mean, that's one of the most difficult things. We've seen, for example, with the UN as well, that you know, people with lots of money can come along and say, "Hi, UN. Hi, IAEA, we can help you out with a great deal because we know you haven't got much money," and then, of course, that's when the problems can often begin. So I actually feel quite sorry for the IAEA. They've got such a difficult job to do here in Vienna. I think we've got an even more difficult task, which is to make sure that this 2015 JCPOA is re-signed. And it's not just a piece of paper. Sure. Let's start at the beginning. Because it's the most important piece of paper on the planet, I'm afraid. Uh-huh. And that is because it is stopping any kind of progress towards a Middle East war between Israel and Iran, which Israel is likely to start if it happens. And, of course, Israel is a nuclear-armed country. So that's why this piece of paper is so important.
I see. Well, let's see here. John White, to use the words of Tony Gosling, the IAEA is pretty much walking a tightrope. It has to show a balanced approach when it comes to this. Do you think that the IAEA has used a balanced approach? And do you agree with how many have said that Iran's nuclear case has been politicized by the IAEA and that it has been influenced?
Well, indeed, good evening. The growing crisis within the larger crisis is are questions over the legitimacy of organizations such as the International Atomic Energy Agency and its sister organization, the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, OPCW, vis-a-vis Syria. And so until those questions are resolved, countries and governments that exist without the US/Western orbit, such as Iran, such as Syria, such as China, such as Russia, such as Venezuela, etc., have just cause to question the actions of the IAEA and to lose confidence in its ability to act as a neutral arbiter on these very, very serious matters. And indeed, these organizations are being corrupted by the huge pressure being placed upon them by Western governments, especially the US government, which is trying desperately to hold on to its hegemonic status in the world. And so this is the growing crisis within the larger crisis, and until the smaller crisis is resolved, the larger crisis cannot be resolved.
It's very odd, to use, for lack of a better way of describing this, Tony Gosling, when you take a look at why Israel comes and tries to present a case against Iran, when the facts prove otherwise when it comes to the inspection that the IAEA has done on Iran's nuclear facilities, with Israel not a party to the NPT, and not open to IAEA inspections or any type of inspections of its nuclear facilities. Do you agree?
Well, yes, of course, it's hypocritical. And I think it's also worth reiterating, and I'm afraid the IAEA and the media in the West here don't seem to take much notice of the fact that the Iranian state has issued a fatwa against nuclear weapons, which is saying that these could not be justified in use at all because they would bring in so many innocent casualties, so many innocent people would die were they to be used, as of course we've seen when they've been used in anger at the end of the Second World War in Hiroshima and Nagasaki by the United States, who, it must be said, did not really need to use those weapons at the time. And so it's rather rich for the United States to be saying that the Iranians to start trying to cast judgment around the world about who can and cannot use nuclear weapons when they used them without really a justified cause back in 1945 to kill hundreds of thousands of Japanese people. So this is, of course, a very important, a very important edict issued by Iran. Saying that there is a religious fatwa against nuclear weapons, because if the Iranians secretly were to be manufacturing nuclear weapons, they would be going against their own faith, their own republic, etc. And they're very unlikely to be doing that, and they would be basically shooting themselves in the foot, so to speak. So there are all sorts of aspects to this which do not sit very well in the international media, which is very biased towards the United States. And I think it's also worth pointing out that we've got I don't talk about the prospect of war and nuclear war in the Middle East lightly, because we have in the United States and in Great Britain a very, very powerful Israel lobby, which is incredibly well funded. We had an Al Jazeera program a couple of years ago which showed the extent to which the Israel lobby in London and the political attaché, Shai Massoff, was prepared to use hundreds of thousands and even millions of pounds to bribe his way into the Conservative Party, into the Labour Party, and he even succeeded in having Alan Duncan, who was a defence minister, removed from his job, who was pro-Palestinian. So we've got a very, very powerful behind-the-scenes Israel lobby in the United States and Britain, and actually in many other countries in Europe too. So that makes this much more urgent, because of course the Israelis know that they can only get away with a preemptive strike or a false flag attack with a nuclear weapon or such sort of thing, if they had some sort of backup within the European powers and the United States. So we've slowly but surely moved towards a potential hair trigger here, and that's why this piece of paper being signed, the JCPOA, is so important, and why the IAEA has to do a balanced job. To be quite honest, I am not sure as to the latest developments with the IAEA, whether it's being balanced or not, but I've seen in the past that they have made statements which seem to be against the Iranians. But I think with something so important, we've got to be very careful about pointing the finger at the IAEA right now.
Well, let's use an example of whether the IAEA has been balanced or not. I'm going to zoom in on Rafael Grossi here. John White, in an interview with AFP, he claimed that the agency had no contact with the new Iranian administration to discuss some issues related to Iran's nuclear program. Now, that goes against the frequent contacts that it has had with Iran's permanent mission and acting representative to the international organizations in Vienna over the past months. Rafael Grossi being influenced here? Is he being directed?
Well, of course he is. This is about hard power politics. We keep hearing the term the rules-based international order. That's bunkum. That's for the consumption of the masses. It's all about hard power. Stalin said it best with the clear-eyed logic of which only dictators are capable. How many divisions does the Pope have? This is what this is all about. It's about maintaining an imbalance of power on the world stage between the West and its allies and those who are running counter to the Western hegemonic agenda. And so the US administration under Biden has proved less to be the change candidate that he promised on the world stage, and more a continuity candidate, more trying to continue the Trump agenda, using these upcoming talks in Vienna to try and leverage concessions from Iran. I have nothing whatsoever to do with Iran's nuclear program, but everything to do with the regional agendas of the Saudis and the Israelis. That's what this is all about. Until you understand that, you understand nothing about what's going on in the world today, especially vis-a-vis Iran and its dealings with the US and its allies on the world stage.
We're looking here at the upcoming talks with P4 Plus One. Tony Gosling for the lifting of sanctions that is going to happen. The Board of Governors is going to take place in a matter of days. And, of course, you have the Rafael Grossi who's going to visit Tehran. And mind you, based on my last question, when Grossi made that statement, he visited Iran on November 22nd, and he said, I've had no contacts with Iranian, with the new administration. How is this going to affect the talks with the P4+1 for the lifting of sanctions in the assessment that the IAEA makes on Iran?
Well, that sort of statement, I'm afraid, is very difficult to believe, isn't it? And, of course, if the IAEA are going to come out with statements like that, then I'm afraid it reduces their credibility. And, you know, we've seen over the years, haven't we, that there's been all sorts of inspections, including those in Iraq, by people like Scott Ritter during the run-up to the illegal 2003 Iraq war, where nations have opened up their countries to inspections, international inspections, and then found that welcoming and honest attitude abused by the West. So it's, I think, very good that the Iranians have made sure that their doors are open to the IAEA, but I think it, of course, makes sense to be quite suspicious of them. You know, particularly, as I say, because we have a momentum building, I believe, for some sort of conflict to go on in the Middle East. I mean, this has really been brewing ever since I first started as a journalist back in 1990 with the first Gulf War, with the massive intervention in Kuwait, and which was really just a trick, wasn't it? Where the Americans conned, using their ambassador April Glasby, conned Saddam into thinking, oh, well, if you go into Kuwait, the Americans won't do anything. So these, I'm afraid, people remember these confidence tricks by the US diplomats, and they realise that actually what's going on at the heart of this is something much, much deeper. A real interest, and I mean, what we're looking at, I believe, today is something as gross as the medieval crusades. A Western and a European, and of course the Americans weren't around in the original crusades, but the Europeans most certainly were, and they managed to fail to get hold of the Middle East through their Knights Templar and the Crusaders back in medieval times. I think they're having a second go to try and control the Middle East. And, of course, there are many Arab countries, not least of which are the poor Palestinians who are suffering under this, who would like to see them out. But many of those Arab countries, including the Gulf states, of course, are now really in bed with the Israelis and the Americans. You know, so we have a very, very dodgy situation, a dangerous situation that's developed. And
sure.
The JCPOA and the IAEA round has to go well in order to make sure that everyone can sleep easily in their beds at night, knowing that we're not going to get some news in the morning saying there's been a massive conflagration going on between Iran and Israel, or Israel and Syria, etc. And of course, that sort of conflict would drag in the superpowers, and that's why I think it's most important for people around the world to realise is it wouldn't just be a localised concern, because Russia, of course, and the United States have got big interests in the region. They wouldn't just allow a little fight.
Well, it wouldn't be Iran doing the offensive moves here, because Israel not only has attacked Syria, John White, on repeated occasions. You're looking at the fact that it has sabotaged Iran's nuclear facilities, including the most recent attack on Karaj. I'd like to point out to you, John White, this header from an Israeli periodical, which says U.S. officials warned Israel attacks on Iranian nuke facilities are counterproductive. It just came out today. It says Israeli officials reportedly dismissed U.S. warnings that attempts to slow down Iran's nuclear program with sabotage are causing Iran to speed it up. What do you think about this headline?
Well, it's the drumbeat to war, isn't it? That drumbeat is sounding ever louder. It's emanating from Tel Aviv. Israeli officials will see that Biden administration is historically weak and they're trying to bend it to its will. They'll be coming up with all sorts of false intelligence to try and make the case for airstrikes, for attacks on Iran's nuclear facilities. This has been ongoing for quite some time. Netanyahu was obsessed with the Iranians, but unfortunately he was not able to make that case sufficiently to pass muster with the Pentagon, although Trump probably was keen to go ahead and do and carry out such airstrikes, given that he was a man who was very much influenced by vanity and by appearing popular and a strong man on the world stage. But it depends on how firm the Pentagon holds against this agenda. There will be various voices within the Pentagon who will be gung-ho for such an airstrike. others that will be opposed to it. So there's a lot of tension taking place within security military circles in the US, but we do know that the Biden administration is not in any position to withstand pressure from the Israelis and the Saudis beyond a certain point. Domestically, it's very weak, it's consumed with culture wars at home, and it's unable to carry out the agenda that it came into power promising to carry out. This ultimately is going to be a litmus test for the Russians, the Chinese, and the European powers. What they do in the next few weeks and months will determine the fate of the world. I don't say that lightly. We are at historical crossroads when it comes to the future of the world, and the Iranians are holding firm because this is not about any supposed crimes or any supposed activities the Iranians are taking undertaking to undermine the Middle Eastern stability. It's all about the Israelis and, to a lesser extent, the Saudis. Israel is a rogue state. And until the world wakes up to that fact, then there will never be security, not only in the Middle East, but in the world entire as a consequence.
So if we have reached that point, do you think then, Tony Gosling, that the IAEA report and the Board of Governors and its assessment on Iran is going to be free and void of any exaggerations when it comes to Iran?
Look, I would very much doubt that, actually. And look, we've got many, many flawed organizations. The IAEA is flawed. The United Nations is flawed, particularly the Security Council. The BBC is flawed, very flawed, my old employer. But they're all we've got. And so we have to try and work with these organizations. Whilst there is a shred of integrity left in them, we've got to work with them, I believe. I think it's also worth pointing out that the United States did not just leave the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the Iran nuclear deal. They also imposed sanctions. They didn't need to do that. They could have left the deal and then attempted to renegotiate it, but they did a double whammy. They started to impose these sanctions, which they didn't just impose from the United States. They also started to take to court countries all around the world that continued to deal with Iran and basically threaten and bully those countries, including these big aircraft manufacturers like Airbus, saying, well, if you supply Iran with goods, we are going to boycott you. And so this was a very pernicious thing that Trump did. And it's going to take a lot of putting back together again.
Sure.
But it's probably one of the most important jobs on the planet. And I would also point out that what's been going up in Glasgow at COP26 and much of this climate agenda has taken away a lot of attention from this much more important issue, in my view.
All right, we're going to unfortunately have to leave it there. Let me thank you there, Tony Gosling from Bristol, historian and investigative journalist, and from Edinburgh, John White. Thank you, writer and political analyst. And at the top of the spotlight, we had our correspondent, Homolesky, who gave us an update from Vienna. With that, we come to an end with this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tavlin, the entire team, it's goodbye. Until next time.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran. By Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us. Allahu Allah.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll be discussing the commentary of the 23rd chapter of the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Mu'minun, or the Believers. Now let's just listen to the related verses, and then we'll be back, so stay with us.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful. Allah will say, how long did you remain on earth in number of years? They will say, we remained a day or part of a day. Ask those who enumerate. He will say, you stayed not but a little, if only you had known.
Brothers and sisters, in the view of the fact that previous verses referred to a part of the painful chastisement of the people of hell, the next verses we're going to discuss will talk about their other kinds of mental punishments in the form of a divine reproach. At first, in the 112th verse, the Almighty Allah says, قَالَ كَمْ لَبِثْتُمْ فِي الْأَرُضِ عَدَدَ سِنِينَ. He will say, how many years did you tarry in the earth? قَالُوا لَبِثْنَا يَوْمًا أَوْ بَعْضَ يَوْمٍ فَاسْأَلِ الْعَادِّينَ. They will say, we tarried but a day or part of a day, but ask those who keep account. So, the 112th verse says, قَالَ كَمْ لَبِثْتُمْ فِي الْأَرْضِ. Say, how many years did you tarry in the earth? The Arabic word أرض used in these verses shows that the purpose of this question is to compare the duration they had lived in this world with the higher reality of duration in hereafter. And this is why the Almighty Allah is going to ask them such a question. This view would render unlikely the opinion of some commentators that the question refers to the duration of their stay in the intermediate world. Although there is some little evidence for this notion in other verses, but it seems that specifically in these couple of verses, this is not the case. Anyway, to this question, they will answer, we tarried but a day or part of a day. قَالُوا لَبِثْنَا يَوْمًا أَوْ بَعْضَ يَوْمٍ. An entire lifetime in this world would amount to no more than a day or a part of a day when compared to the eternality of the rewards and punishments in the hereafter. That's why they will answer to that question and say, we tarried but a day or part of a day. And this means it is very unfortunate that most of mankind buy hell and the eternal punishment in exchange for the fleeting pleasures and comforts of this world, which account only to one day or part of one day. In comparison with the rewards and punishments of hereafter. And in fact, the long lifetimes in this world comparing the life in hereafter, where not only the blessings of it are eternal, but also the punishments of it are infinite, seem as some fleeting moments.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
And then, as an emphasis on their own saying, or maybe in order to deliver a more accurate answer, they will say, فَاسْأَلِ الْعَادِينَ, but ask those who keep account. Perhaps the purpose of those who keep account might be the same angels that carefully count and record every instant of our lives. And not just the moments, but everything we do, all of our deeds done in them. Because they know the account of these things better than the others. So we have, as we understand in this part, from this part of the verse, that we have some angels whose duty and responsibility is to account for what we have done in this world, and we have some of them that their responsibility is to count the number of the days and keep that account. So putting these two verses together, we understand that even the full lifetime in this world, in this transient world, would amount to no more than a day or part of the day, as will the people in hereafter answer. This question of Kam Labithum has been asked in the Holy Quran throughout different cases, and interestingly, everyone answers to this question based on his or her own supposition. Sometimes some would say Sa'atan min Nahar, we stayed in the world one couple of hours of one day. Some say Ashiyatan aw Duhaha, one night or one morning, and some will say Yawman aw Ba'dha Yawm, one day or part of the day. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me, worry, and that's when fit begin. Thank you.
follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsetodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsetodayEnglish.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The Daesh terror group, known mainly as the ISIS or ISIL in the Western world, was founded by Abu Mus'ab al-Zarqawi and became known internationally in 2014 after driving Iraqi security forces out of key cities in lightning attacks followed by its capture of the strategic city of Mosul. For several years, the group carried out the most brutal attacks against civilians and government forces in both Iraq and Syria. Just to name a few, the Sinjar massacre, during which thousands of Yazidis were butchered, and the killing of more than 2,000 cadets and personnel at a military academy in Iraq's Tikrit. They also inflicted irreparable damage on Iraq's vital infrastructure. The savagery against the civilian populations was beginning to raise concerns in the international community about the situation in the two Arab countries. Several regional nations, including Iran, were already viewing Daesh as a national security threat. That prompted Iranian authorities to move to assign top commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, to take on a military advisory role to help those countries eradicate the terror group. With the liberation of Abu Kamal, a Syrian city close to the border with Iraq that was the last stronghold held by Daesh terrorists, and the bringing down of the flag of the terrorist group and the raising of the flag of Syria, General Soleimani announced the termination of the rule of Daesh. In a letter sent to Iran's leader in November 2017, the commander outlined who had been behind the creation of the terror group.
All these crimes have been designed and implemented by U.S. leaders and organizations according to the acknowledgement of the highest-ranking U.S. official who is currently president of the United States. Moreover, this scheme is still being modified and implemented by current American leaders.
The Iranian commander also hailed Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Sistani for mobilizing all facilities to fight the scourge and praised resistance forces in Iraq and Syria for their role in defeating the terrorist group.
Certainly, the resistance of the Iraqi and Syrian governments and the perseverance of the armies and youth of these two countries, especially the highly popular mobilization forces and other Muslim youth from other countries with the prominent presence of Hezbollah led by its great leader Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, played an important role in overturning this dangerous event.
General Soleimani also acknowledged Iran's role in bringing the life of Daesh to an end.
Definitely the valuable role of the nation and the governments of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the respected president in particular, the parliament, the defense ministry, as well as police, military, and security organizations of our country in supporting the above-mentioned states and nations is admirable.
General Soleimani, along with commander of the Iraqi Popular Mobilization Units, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, was assassinated in a U.S. drone strike in the Iraqi capital, Baghdad, in January 2020 as part of a plot to remove a force against a group created by the U.S. and its allies to pursue their political goals in West Asia.
بالدفاع
the Hamas movement held a press conference during which all Palestinian factions condemned Britain Home Secretary Priti Patel's announcement that she's seeking to declare Palestinian group Hamas a terrorist organization. Palestinian factions say this move targets the Palestinian resistance and comes to the benefit of Israeli occupation at the expense of Palestinian rights.
All Palestinian factions here today condemn this decision, and we consider it another aggression added to the history against Palestine. This is a violation against international law that gives Palestinians the right to defend themselves. Considering Hamas as a terrorist organization is a violation of our people's right of expression and freedom. We call on the British Parliament to refuse this decision.
The ban, which must be approved by Parliament, would make it illegal in Britain to be a member of Hamas or to express support for the group, or facing up to 14 years in prison. The UK government argued that it was not possible to distinguish between Hamas's Bolotica and military wings, calling Hamas fundamentally anti-Semitic.
We really condemn this British move that targets all Palestinians and shows the British support for the Israeli entity against Palestinians. The UK has first given Israel the green light to go ahead with its crimes by the Balfour Declaration that we are still now paying its price. Instead of redeeming this declaration and standing by the Palestinians, the UK gives the green light to demolish the Palestinian resistance.
Hamas, a Palestinian resistance group that fights against Israeli atrocities, has ruled the Gaza Strip since 2007. Hamas expressed the British government's decision as shocking and accused the UK of continuing with its aggression against Palestinian people.
Palestinian factions here have expressed anger at the British government's decision to ban Hamas's activities in the country. They regard the move as a blatant support for Israel at the expense of Palestinian rights. They say the resistance front has the right to defend Palestinians with all means. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
Coronavirus restrictions are returning to Europe as the governments struggle to tackle the resurgence of the pandemic. The measures have sparked protests in several European countries. Cities across the Netherlands saw fiery riots erupt for a second night, with angry mobs running amok in The Hague. Hooded protesters torched bicycles on Saturday night and threw stones and fireworks at police. Officers, some on horseback, responded by charging on the crowd and making arrests. But the rally in the capital, Amsterdam, remained largely peaceful amid a heavy police presence. During the first night of the unrest in the port city of Rotterdam, police opened fire on protesters, injuring a few and rounded up dozens. The Netherlands has imposed a 3-week partial lockdown after registering a record spike in COVID cases. The government is also planning to ban unvaccinated people from entering public places, but the opponents argue that such restrictions are not the answer.
I expect from our leaders to have a long-term vision. We don't see a long-term vision. We just see repeating the same measures over and over again and not working.
Also in Austria, a 20-day nationwide lockdown and a plan to make jabs mandatory have brought tens of thousands to the streets of Vienna. Austria is the first European country to make vaccination a legal requirement. But the protesters believe the government is only restricting their freedom. Croatians, frustrated by COVID measures, marched through the capital Zagreb in their thousands to tell the government enough is enough. Refusing to wear protective masks, the protesters called for the government to scrap compulsory vaccinations for public sector workers.
I came to support all the people who oppose COVID passports because it's actually a measure that divides us into citizens and non-citizens, and it leads to great discrimination even towards totalitarianism.
I think that our government is doing the same thing countries that collaborated with Nazi Germany did in the 1940s.
The COVID pass for civil servants also enraged thousands of Danes who came out in Copenhagen to call on the government to cancel the measure.
The World Health Organization is warning that Europe is the only region in the world with surging deaths, and that the virus could kill 500,000 more people by February. 70 million infections, 1.6 million deaths, and still counting. For now, it seems that governments across Europe are facing the double dilemma of keeping the protests in check and bringing the fresh wave of infections under control.
Yemen's armed forces carried out another massive retaliatory attack against several targets in Saudi Arabia using 14 drones. The targets included Aramco refineries in Jeddah, as well as several military sites in Riyadh, Abha, Jizan, and Najran.
In response to the escalation of the Saudi-led aggression and its crimes and siege, our armed forces conducted the 8th operation codenamed Balance of Deterrence by bombing several military and vital targets of the Saudi enemy. The armed forces have proven their ability to carry out more offensive operations against the Saudi and Emirati enemy within the legitimate defense of our people and homeland.
Experts say this operation comes in response to Riyadh's recent escalation in Marib and the fresh air strikes that killed civilians, including children, in Hodeidah and other cities.
This large-scale operation came amid the ongoing aggression and in response to the recent Saudi escalation. Saudi-led coalition is trying to pressure our forces to stop their progress towards the city of Marib by targeting civilians, and this prompted the Yemeni army leadership to accelerate the implementation of major operations deep inside the kingdom.
Recently, the Saudi-led coalition has escalated its air strikes across Yemen and killed more civilians, including children. However, Yemen's military has vowed to hit back at those killing Yemeni civilians.
The Yemeni army has given a stern warning to the Emirati regime, saying it is capable of expanding the range of its attacks to include targets deep inside Emirati territories. Yemenis say their army should continue its operations until the war is stopped. Abdul Latif Al Washali, Sana'a.
The UK government has announced plans to declare the entirety of Hamas as a terrorist organization. In a move led by Home Secretary Priti Patel, supporters of the group could face up to 14 years in jail under plans announced on Friday.
Previously, it was just the armed wing of the Palestinian organization which had been prescribed under the Terrorism Act 2000. However, the new ban will also include the political wing of the group, which currently serves as the democratically elected government in the besieged Gaza Strip.
Following the announcement, criticism came in thick and fast online. Patel's close relationship with Israel was one of the main points raised.
It's not really a surprise, considering where this prescribing is coming from. Look at the UK. Look at the UK. It's an imperial power that refuses to acknowledge the damage caused by its empire's past. You know, how many countries have had to struggle against the United Kingdom for their own independence? So it's no shock that this prescribing statement is coming from the UK government, and it's no shock that it's coming from this current Home Secretary, Priti Patel, who, do not forget, once tried to give international aid money to Israel's army.
Why such a thing will happen? And the only sort of explanation is, when you look at the Home Secretary's history, that she actually undermines the procedures and policies of British government, her own country, and had a secret meetings with the then Prime Minister Netanyahu, and she was removed because of that. So she has actually shown she's more willing to do things against British interests and in British policy in support of the State of Israel.
Israel welcomed the move as a significant decision, while Hamas accused the UK of supporting the aggressors at the expense of the victims. But the move would require approval by Parliament first. A prescription order has been introduced, with debates and a vote expected to follow. If passed, the law will come into force on November the 26th. Robert Carter, London.
justice system in the U.S. in the spotlight after a Wisconsin court cleared homicide charges against white teenager Kyle Rittenhouse. He was in court over his fatal shooting of two men and injuring another during anti-racism protests in Kenosha, Wisconsin in August 2020. The court ruled that Rittenhouse had acted in self-defense. It rejected the argument of prosecutors accusing the 18-year-old of provoking violence during the Kenosha rallies.
It's been a long day. It's been a long 3 weeks. We're very happy with the verdict. We're happy that the jury took the time, put in an incredible amount of effort.
Gun rights supporters welcomed the verdict, too. Former President Donald Trump also congratulated Rittenhouse and defended the shooting as self-defense. Republican lawmakers were happy, too, with Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson saying justice has been served. But others do not think so. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio, a Democrat, believes to call the verdict a miscarriage of justice is an understatement. And the victim's friends say they are sad about what the system has done.
I am, like I said, not surprised at what happened here today, but I am heartbroken.
Several civil rights and racial justice groups denounced the verdict as a travesty. The American Civil Liberties Union says the trial highlights an urgent need for reforms to both police and the legal system. And gun control advocates warn the verdict could inspire a new wave of armed vigilantism. President Joe Biden, reacting to the verdict, says it leaves many Americans, including himself, feeling angry and concerned. But the jury has spoken.
I stand by what the jury has concluded. The jury system works, and we have to abide by it.
Biden wants everybody to be peaceful as people fill the streets across the U.S. to protest what they see as the failure of the justice system. Unrest broke out in some locations. Commentator Kyla Papuche says Rittenhouse's case shows increasing polarization in the U.S. and eroding trust in the government there.
It is also a foreshadowing of the deep division, the polarization that is increasing and getting worse in the United States. There is more growing apathy, distrust, and zero confidence in every thought facet of the state and the United States government, not just the judicial system.
Rittenhouse has also reignited debate about gun rights and the boundaries of self-defense in the U.S. As critics remain unconvinced and people are on the streets, the standoff over the American gun culture, racism, and vigilantism appears far from over.
Tens of thousands take to the streets of the Austrian capital ahead of the nation's fourth general lockdown, affecting the vaccinated and unvaccinated alike.
This is just one of several rallies taking place across the city just a day after the government announced that vaccinations will become mandatory from February.
Around 2 million of the country's 9 million residents have refused to get vaccinated.
I've not been vaccinated, and I believe this is a bluff on the part of the government. They want to put people under pressure. When vaccination becomes mandatory, I will stay at home. I believe everyone should be able to make their own choice.
I'm here because I'm against the vaccination for everybody. I want to decide myself. It's my body, and so I don't want to tell anyone to me that I have to go to vaccination.
The federal government has blamed the right-wing opposition Freedom Party, the FPO, for fueling public anger at a time of national crisis. Police forces confirmed that right-wing extremists, including convicted neo-Nazis, had taken part in the rallies, which remained largely peaceful, despite several instances of clashes and arrests. Austria is now reporting well over 15,000 new infections a day, with the total death toll almost reaching 12,000 people. Health experts say without compulsory vaccinations, the country will only stumble into new lockdowns every 3 or 4 months. Homolesky, Vienna.
As the clock is ticking for a new round of talks between Iran and the remaining signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal, Washington is showing more signs of unwillingness to settle disagreements despite earlier comments made by U.S. officials. On Thursday, Washington announced new sanctions on 6 Iranian nationals and one entity, accusing them of intimidating and influencing American voters during last year's presidential election. Iran's foreign ministry condemned the new sanctions as illegitimate and baseless. It said the new bans are a continuation of the failed maximum pressure policy adopted by the previous U.S. administration. Tehran also highlighted Washington's long history of meddling in other countries' internal affairs and playing a blame game to deceive the American public. Analysts say there is no evidence of any interference by Iran in the U.S.'s 2020 presidential race.
There's no evidence whatsoever that Iran or Russia had any meddling, any interference with American elections. The only meddlers in the election was really the Democrat Party and the Mossad and the Israeli intelligence operations and the CIA. They've been perfecting these programs for over 15 years, and they've undermined the elections in other countries, such as Ukraine and Venezuela, and that was admitted to by people like John McCain and John Bolton and Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. These elections in America have been farces and completely manipulated by the technology that the U.S. developed for influencing and corrupting other elections. But they are attempting to constantly brand Iran as a threat to the United States and trying to whip up frenzy in the American people.
U.S. President Joe Biden and his Democratic Party repeatedly criticized Donald Trump during his term for his way of dealing with Iran and withdrawing from the 2015 nuclear agreement. But ironically, since he came to power, Biden persisted in his predecessor's so-called maximum pressure campaign against Iran and even imposed more sanctions against the Islamic Republic. This is why U.S. media and officials have admitted that the campaign against Iran has failed. Tehran held several rounds of talks with the FIPOR Plus One group between April and June with the aim of removing the sanctions, but no breakthrough was reached. Now, as the new round of talks scheduled to start on November 29th draws nearer, the U.S. measures against Iran further question Washington's sincerity about the issue, regardless of which party is at the helm in the White House.
Rights groups and families of missing persons held a press conference in Karachi to once again voice their grave concerns over the non-recovery of their loved ones, slamming the government for its lack of seriousness in their recovery. Last Saturday, families of Shia missing persons changed their direction towards military offices known to be the real powerhouses in Pakistan. Victims' families are outraged over the law enforcement agencies who they now accuse for clamping down on their right to protest. They are calling on the government to prosecute those responsible for abduction of their loved ones in the court of law. The family says state institutions are open for talks with Takfiri terrorists who have killed over 70,000 Pakistanis but are not serious to recover missing persons.
From 2009, we are protesting for the safe release of my father, and I have knocked every door of justice to the Supreme Court, High Court, and on the Commission of Enforced Disappearance, but I didn't get any positive result, or yet still I don't know where my father is.
The first post 9/11 reported case of enforced disappearances was Dr. Afia, who was kidnapped from Karachi along with her three kids in 2003.
Those who at the end of the day come for the agreement, those who at the end of the day come for the negotiations that we have your men and we'll release them, let's say after 2 months, after 3 months, those are the real people. These agencies, these people who should not be named in this country, these people who are above the law, who are beyond the law, these are the real authorities, these are the real officers whose job is to run this country, but and actually they are destroying this country.
Enforced disappearances is a chronic human rights violation in Pakistan, with more than 7,000 complaints of enforced disappearances since 2011, where the real number might be much higher than the official figure. Mohammed Turi, Karachi.